Mr. Chairman, Hamayu Akhtar Khan, Ashraf Ayat, Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, it's a privilege for me to be present in this hall, especially with such a distinguished gathering and eminent panelists. Anatole and Ashraf have covered a lot of ground. So I would try not to repeat some of the points and arguments that have been made. I'll start with Pakistan-India relations. Last, or rather early this week, we had two very eminent foreign ministers, Hina Rabbani Khar and Khurshid Kasturi. They made a very impassioned plea for normal friendly relations with India. And of course, those who were present at the launching of the book by Mr. Khurshid Kasturi, he made a very strong case for the continuation of dialogue, and particularly the understandings that were arrived at on the back channel. Well, I was not part of the back channel, but I did initiate the dialogue between Pakistan and India in 2004. But the back channel started after that, 2005, and I do give a lot of credit to my very distinguished colleague, Riaz Mohammad Khan, who actually carried out the substance of the talks. But what is the future of that today? I think it's parentless. It's an orphan. Nobody is willing to adopt it. Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif's government has not made any statement on this issue. Of course, Foreign Minister Kasturi claimed that the army was on board. Everybody was on board. So what's happened now? Who is responsible for it? And have we talked to the Indians on the subject? And it seems that even on the Indian side, there is maybe some disappointment that this process hasn't gone very far. So, at least in my humble opinion, I don't think there is a future in that. In that particular, whatever understanding that been arrived at, I think Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif, in at least in one statement, he talks about the Lahore Declaration. I mean, there's Simla and there's the Lahore Declaration, but I don't think there is any clarity on the part of the government on whether these proposals that were sorted out between people on the back channel, they are still valid or they are not valid. Now, if we were to see just the period when Prime Minister Modi came into power and since then, I think Pakistan has made considerable effort. And, I mean, there is criticism of Mr. Nawaz Sharif. I mean, a lot of people think that he's appeasing India. But at the same time, I think one can also give him credit for showing tolerance and patience. Despite all the strong, negative, warlike statements that were made by the Indian government. But it seems to me that the present government is not clear what kind of relationship it wants with India. So I think this time when there is no dialogue or there is an absence of dialogue, we should think in terms of coming up with some ideas. What can be done? I think if we were to look at the problems between India and Pakistan, there are substantive problems. There's Kashmir, there's Siachen, the Sirkri. And of course, the Indians emphasize a lot on terrorism. That's an issue. But we now have new issues coming up. I mean, the activity of the Indian agencies in Pakistan. Indians accuse Pakistan of promoting terrorism through non-state actors, but we now have a situation where the Indian government itself is involved in activities in Pakistan. That's one thing. Secondly, the situation in Kashmir itself is on the boil. I mean, the alienation was always there, but now, if we were to look at the Indian reports, Indian press reports, even they are emphasizing that the government, Modi's government, has to do something to ensure that this situation does not get out of hand. So I sincerely hope that that this does not become a flashpoint between Pakistan and India. Over the last 2.5-3 years, Indian position on all major issues has been hardened. On Siachen, they've taken a very strong view, and I think here the Indian establishment came into play, and it's the Indian army that does not want a settlement in Siachen. Similarly, their position on Sirkrek has also changed. Now, these are the hard issues, and of course, we do hope that as and when the dialogue is resumed, there is some movement at least on these fronts. And there are irritants. Trade, I don't consider it an issue. I think it's an irritant, and perhaps it should be in Pakistan's interest to think in terms of some level of trade, which suits us. If it suits us, good. If it does not, then of course you always have the option to restrict it. I think our contacts in other areas should also be people-to-people contact. This is a good thing. But again, I mean, we've been dealing with these issues for a long, long time. And even the visas are still very difficult to obtain for the common man. So I think this is an area where we can focus. But I would say that perhaps we can, since there is a worldwide concern about the situation in South Asia, and particularly Pakistan and India. President Obama has described Pakistan as a country that gave him nightmares or sleepless nights. And only recently he has again talked about the situation in this region in the context of Afghanistan and Pakistan, predicting a rather difficult future. And of course, in the nuclear summit that took place, I think he's also made a reference to India and Pakistan, that Pakistan and India should try and sort things out. But I think here, in my opinion, the responsibility rests on India, because India is the major country in the region. And Pakistan has been accommodating, at least in terms of the process. We've been wanting talks. I think the Foreign Office never stops begging for a dialogue. Similarly, the Prime Minister has never stopped talking about relations with India in terms of, in a positive sense. But Indian response has been overwhelmingly negative. The stalemate at the moment is also because India thinks that progress is not being made on the issue of terrorism. I don't see progress on Bombay. I don't see progress on Pathankot. I think the two are going to be running in the same direction. And eventually, it's not going to get anywhere. So, how do we break the deadlock? A lot of people think that we should get the United States to help. We should get some other country to help to mediate between the two countries. I think that's not a good idea. India and Pakistan, if they can sit together sincerely, I think they have the capacity and the ability to come up with things. Somebody called me the other day and he asked me if Pakistan would be interested in an OWASP Act. So I said, well, you know, this is old hat. I mean, there are lots of occasions when this idea was discussed. I mean, right from 48 onwards, there have been several proposals. There have been drafts from Pakistan, there have been drafts from India. Now, because I think of a major concern, worldwide concern about the situation in the region, and because of the tension between India and Pakistan, because both countries are nuclear armed, perhaps it's not a bad idea to consider. Sometimes the Indians have advanced drafts, sometimes we have presented drafts. So perhaps it would not be a bad idea, because this could, if the two countries can work out a draft on the basis of not only the UN resolutions, but the principles of peaceful coexistence, and then specifically ensure that the territories are either side are not used against each other. I think this is something that can perhaps be considered at some stage. I'm not sure that the dialogue is imminent or so, but although I know that our foreign secretary is going to India for the Arts of Asia conference, maybe this coming week, and although no bilateral meeting is slated, but perhaps he might be able to get a clue whether things can move forward or not. I think Pakistan-India relationship also has its impact on Afghanistan, as Ashraf has pointed to it, and also Anatole. I think that's complicated. Maybe one idea could be that this group of four, there are some people who argue that India should be included. There are others who argue against it. But I think it is probably sensible to think in terms of including Iran and Russia in this group, because Iran is a major player in the region. Iran is a neighbor of Afghanistan, and Iran also has the capacity to create a lot of problems. So I think it's in Pakistan's interest and in the interest of the region, and I'm sure the Afghans would themselves would welcome this idea that Iran and perhaps the Soviet Union, Russia should also be included in the, because Russians have very serious interests in Central Asia, and they would want to. But although they have been critical of this group at the moment, and I think they are critical only because they are not in it. If they had been given the opportunity to be part of it, perhaps they could have made a contribution. And we cannot ignore that Chinese-Russian relations are improving very rapidly in many areas, not only in the context of the sort of road and belt context, but you know, because of the problems that Russia has faced in Europe, and also the problem that China is facing in the Pacific. So there is a growing common interest, although I'm not suggesting that there's going to be an alliance, but clearly there is. On the strategic level, there seems to be improved understanding. So I think that would also be very helpful for Pakistan. Well, I don't want to touch on Pakistan-China relations, because it's been already done. I personally think our relations with China remain very solid. Certainly, they wouldn't want Pakistan to drag them into problems with India or with the United States. But I think China is a very reliable friend. I wouldn't want to use the word ally, because I think the Chinese themselves don't use it, so it's best that we leave it at that. Now, CPAC is also going to be an issue. I mean, the Indians have already made known their reservations or concerns, whatever we hear in terms of the Indian involvement in Pakistan in Balochistan and in Karachi, the indications are that CPAC is a major concern for India. But I think, as Ashraf has pointed out, CPAC would have a future if we were, you know, to create the right circumstances in the country. And of course, here in the Chinese basically have three concerns. One is security, which I think they are somewhat satisfied now because I think the army has assured them of foolproof security to the extent possible. Then they are, I think they are also concerned about the capacity and capability, whether Pakistan is able to handle such huge projects. So these are some of the concerns, but I mean, my own talks with some of my Chinese friends, and I was there a few months ago, they said we are very serious. We want to implement this project for Pakistan, for the people of Pakistan. And I think one thing which is really a matter of concern, this government's has made a contribution in the sense that a thing which should not have been a controversy, they've made it into a controversy. They should have had the sense to consult all provinces. And in fact, the Chinese emphasize this point. So that these projects are for the whole of Pakistan. It's not a question of having a favorite province. And this is unfortunate that this should have become a bit of a controversy. And it's not yet resolved. There's still the question of the western route. I haven't seen a map yet from the government. And I don't see why they don't go into the parliament and explain this to everybody what the project is all about. Why should it be kept such a closely guarded secret? And also the projects. I think in the context of projects, the government has to be very transparent, and they are not being transparent. I think that also is an issue, and I think also it has caused some concern in Peking. Now, if I have to just focus a little bit on the Middle East, I think the situation in the Middle East is extremely grim. Countries have imploded, and Pakistan, of course, the Saudis wanted Pakistan army to have some kind of a role in Yemen. I think it was the sensible thing not to get involved, because historically Pakistan has avoided being involved in Arab issues and Arab problems. Arabs don't like it. Quite frankly, they don't like it. And I think if Pakistan had got involved in all these issues, it would have created a lot of more problems for Pakistan and Iran as well. And very rightly pointed out by Anatole and Ashraf that for Pakistan to get involved in the proxy sort of war between Saudi Arabia and Iran would have very serious consequences for Pakistan. So it's best, but I don't know. We have recently participated in some military exercises conducted by this alliance of like-minded countries. And the government has gone on record saying that they still don't know what the contours are, what is the mandate of this particular alliance, and what will be Pakistan's role. So I think it's very strange that they've sort of signed up and they still don't know what they've signed up for. That's one thing. And secondly, a very strange joint communique came up recently from the OIC, where there is a very strong condemnation of Iran. So I think, I don't know how this has really happened, but I'm sure the draft must have been circulated. But clearly Pakistan is part of the, has certainly been part of the joint communique. So this doesn't make sense how Pakistan got involved in this. So finally I would say that, our foreign policy will be only effective and meaningful and result-oriented. Also, if our own house is in order, I think that's a very serious matter. So you can't be conducting relations with your neighbors if your own house is not in order. And secondly, if you look at it this way, what is the position of the Prime Minister today? We wish him good health, frankly. All of us should wish him good health. But health means good, lot of wealth also. And wealth means good health. So I hope we come out of this thing. I don't know how we're going to come out of it. But clearly it does weaken the Prime Minister. And I think we should take it for granted that Indians, are the major neighbor of Pakistan, the problems that we have with them, I'm sure they're doing their sums and working out how to now deal with a Prime Minister whose internal position is somewhat weakened. So this is something. And secondly, there's also this issue about the army and the government being on the same page. So, a lot of people who know, I'm not very knowledgeable about this relationship, maybe the general can tell us something about it. But I have a feeling the page may be the same, but maybe different playbooks. So, I think this is unfortunate, because if you want to have relations with neighbors, you want to sort out these problems, you have to be, everybody has to be on the same page. I mean, major political parties, major institutions of the country have to be contributing to it. But just to say that we want good neighborly relations, is frankly not enough. How do you implement that? I think that's where the problem is. About Afghanistan, I just want to touch one point. I met some Afghans a few months ago in a seminar in Oman. And of course, they were very critical of Pakistan, Pakistan's role, Pakistan's army, ISI. I don't think they said anything, not even one single thing, single positive thing about Pakistan. In fact, one went to the extent of using hard words like, we hate Pakistan. Pakistan has no goodwill in Afghanistan. And stop messing around, those kind of things. So I told him, I said, I want to understand, what exactly is ISI's influence in Afghanistan? I mean, the way you're putting it, they're very effective. But I don't think that's the way we look at it. So what sections of the Afghan society is the ISI effective with? If there's no goodwill at the common level, common man's level, surely there's no goodwill with their counterpart agency in Afghanistan. Even the Afghan bureaucracy, I know, is somewhat hostile. So where exactly is ISI's influence? And he said, well, that's something I cannot answer. Thank you very much.